welcome to the Healthy Life Redesign Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Kimberly O'Brien. As a naturopathic doctor, I help you to transform your health and amplify your energy with nutrition, natural medicine, and neuroscience. Each week, I share life-changing health habits and mindset shifts to help you break through the struggle and become the person you know you are meant to be. Are you ready to let your health and happiness come naturally? It's time to own your health and live a life you love. Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Healthy Life Redesign Podcast. Today, I'm so fortunate to have Crystal Phillips joining me, who is the co-founder of the Branch Out Foundation, which is an organization that is pioneering neuroscience and complementary alternative medicine research for neurological diseases like Parkinson's disease, multiple sclerosis, autism, traumatic brain injuries, and depression. Crystal and I first met a couple of years ago at a speaking event in Calgary, and when she shared her incredibly inspiring story and her mission to help others with me, I knew that our paths would somehow intertwine again. So now here we are 2 years later, and I'm so grateful to have her on the show to share her story with all of you today. So Crystal, thank you so much for joining me today on the Healthy Life Redesign Podcast. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited.
Good. Yeah, it's really great to have you here. And I mean, I've been watching and I've been seeing the things that you've been doing with the Branch Out Foundation over the years. So I know just how driven you are, but I also know that when your journey first began, this wasn't really the path that you had initially intended your life to take. So can you take us back and share some of your initial aspirations with the audience and take us through your story?
Sure. Yeah. So my story starts kind of when I was a kid. I was a speed skater, and it was just like the classic story of you eat, sleep, and dream speed skating. It's all I really knew. A lot of drawings in my journal growing up of me wearing an Olympic gold medal and that kind of thing. And I also had the nickname Quadzilla because I had this genetic advantage of large leg muscles, which is actually a very convenient advantage when it comes to the sport of speed skating. So I excelled really quickly in the sport as a young kid, won many Canadian, North American championships. And if you're serious about speed skating, once you graduate from high school, the place to be is Calgary. So I moved to Calgary after I graduated. And my goal was to be a full-time speed skater until I made that Olympic podium. And about a year after I got to Calgary and was in the national program, it was a matter of 3 days. I lost feeling from my chest to my toes. I lost bladder control and I had double vision, and literally went from one of the top skaters in Canada to not walking. And that lasted about 5 months. And my doctor said, I have multiple sclerosis and there's a good chance I'll never speed skate again. And I'm still a teenager at the time, and usually when I say that, everyone's like, oh, that's so young. Mm-hmm. But truthfully, I actually think there's an advantage of being a teenager, especially in my situation where I actually hadn't dealt with adversity up until that point. So I still had that beautiful, invincible mindset that wasn't my reality, that I wasn't going to speed skate again, because I've never had to deal with something like that before. So I took the same approach that I took as an elite athlete, and that was you build a team to help you get to your performance, and in my case, get back to my health. Mm-hmm. So I built a team kind of utilizing the resources I had on the national team with speed skating, had access to some of the top nutritionists and psychologists and physiotherapists and chiropractors and all and coaches and trainers. And I worked with all of them this time now on my health to get me back to skating. And slowly but surely, I relearned how to walk, how to bike, and eventually I could speed skate again. And I kind of looked like Bambi at first on ice, but eventually I was able to race. And I raced my first competition about 4 months after I could walk again. And I remember crying myself to sleep that night because my times were just not as fast as they used to be before my first episode of MS. And I wake up the next morning and the entire left side of my body was numb. Mm. And that's when it really hit me. Like, I really do have this disease. There's got to be some other approaches that I can take. My only option that I was given by my doctor was to take a daily drug injection. So I started doing that. but then started to look again at what else I could do. And I became a nutritionist, started studying herbal medicine, and became sort of a guinea pig for all type forms of healing, whether it was conventional or natural. I would basically try anything because I was pretty desperate to, you know, get back to health, let alone skating.
Right.
And as I got more into some of the less conventional approaches, my relapses, and if you don't know much about MS, you go in and out of relapse. The theory is that your immune system is attacking your nervous system. Mm-hmm. And happens sort of randomly. But as I started to look at things more holistically, my relapses became fewer and further between. And when I had them, they weren't as severe. And I was able to work my way back into a competitive level. And by 2009, I qualified for the trials for the 2010 Olympics.
Amazing.
And I was very excited to get back to this elite level. It was a super emotional experience racing like that again. And I go into the pre-Olympic season of training and I wake up one morning blind in my left eye. Ugh. And I get more tests done. My neurologist said, "I'm sorry, Crystal, but your disease looks like it's progressing and you should be prepared that you could be developing progressive MS, meaning you could be in a wheelchair in the next couple of years. So basically start organizing your life accordingly." And they also recommended a much more aggressive drug treatment plan and started listing the side effects. And I thought, you know what, I've got nothing to lose if I'm going to be in a wheelchair in 2 years. Well, and I'm never going to know whether it's the conventional or the non-conventional stuff that's working. So I decided to take the quote unquote risk of going off of my drugs and treat my disease 100% naturally, holistically, or unconventionally, however you want to say it, mm-hmm. instead. And I raised money to see a private healthcare doctor. I was pretty aggressive with my treatments. And 8 months later, I came a few spots off my Olympic team, off the Olympic team. And 8 years later is now. And not only am I not in a wheelchair, but I haven't had a relapse since. And it's been a really cool personal journey to get to this state. But I also realize I'm one anecdotal case of an unpredictable disease. However, you go online, it doesn't take you longer than a few minutes to realize that I'm one anecdotal case of thousands and thousands of people out there who've had a really similar journey to me using less conventional approaches to healing their neurological disorders, whether it's MS or autism or concussion recovery or anything like that. So yeah, that kind of brings us to today. And through that personal experience, there were a few gaps in the system that were highlighted to me, and that was the need for more credibility and respect and research and then funding for that research into non-pharmaceutical approaches to neurological disorders and utilizing innovative technologies. So I started the Branch Out Foundation to literally branch out and fund a whole new field of study that we've now termed NeuroCAM, and it stands for neuroscience plus complementary and alternative modalities, and represents the unconventional approaches, non-pharmaceutical approaches, and innovative technologies for all neurological disorders.
So, Crystal, I mean, one of the things that I find so inspiring through that is that not only have you stayed so positive through it all, but how resilient you've been through all of the health challenges that you've experienced. And I mean, you really used your diagnosis and your struggles to fuel something so much bigger than yourself and to really help others. And for you, I mean, was there a certain point in time that shift occurred? Like, when did you know basically that you needed to create the Branch Out Foundation?
It's a good question. I was fundraising for the MS Society for several years, and I wasn't totally sure where the money was going. And I also was a little bit disappointed to see a lack in funding and resources going towards, and just support in general, going towards some of the less conventional approaches that were seemingly so helpful for myself. Mm-hmm. And the more I got talking to experts in the field, in academia, in the medical field, I realized this truly is a gap. And if no one else is addressing it out there, I'm going to have to start my own charity, which is totally inconvenient because as anyone who starts a business or a charity knows, it's a lot of work.
Right.
But the more money we raise, the more grants we're able to fund, the more we realize that there is a true need for the Branch Out Foundation. We truly are filling a gap that exists. And there's a lot of really cool research out there and possibilities that just are missing funds.
Yeah, and I'm excited to talk about that later in the show as well. And so one thing that comes up for me is I'm wondering, when you decided to not go the pharmaceutical approach and the conventional approach to treating your MS and to go the natural route, did you face any criticism or opposition to that? And how did you kind of navigate through that, if you did?
Yeah, so, I mean, it wasn't aggressive resistance. It was more a lot of concern. So a lot of people that were really close to me who didn't have the same experience as me, you know, they didn't feel what I felt when I started to treat my disease more holistically. So, I mean, I was pretty confident that I was doing something that was going to help me because I felt it. But for people on the outside that are just so worried and concerned for me, and then, you know, my last relapse, I was blind in my left eye. So I'm blind at the time, pretty much. Mm-hmm. And so to see me take what seemed like an irrational decision to go off of my drugs, it scared a lot of people. Some of my, you know, my closest loved ones were a bit scared, but at the same time, they knew that when I make a decision, it's made and they can support it or not, but I'm probably going to do it anyway. So they thankfully were unbelievably supportive. In the medical community, it was not supported. It was more just saying, you know, if this is what you want to do, I'm not going to stop you, but it's not what I recommend. So, yeah.
Right, for sure. I mean, I can imagine. So as a naturopathic doctor, I often have patients coming to me wanting to take more of a natural approach to treating their concerns. And it's not always instead of a conventional approach. Often it's blended and intertwined. But I mean, I know exactly the kind of struggles and doubts that can bring up in people, because, I mean, one of the reasons that I love that you're doing all this research into this area is that it is something that needs to be brought to the forefront, because there are so many natural therapies and dietary modifications and things that can be done from a perspective of supporting the body through something like this that just isn't talked about. So I think that people do get a lot of fear, and I think it is really inspiring when we see somebody like you who has gone a natural route and supported their body and then had success with that. So, I mean, 8 years in remission is huge. So, I mean, I thank you for pioneering the way in this regard and really for diving deep into supporting more research to be done so that more people can have the confidence in taking that approach. But I'd love if you'd talk a bit about some of the things that it was that you did, because I think people sometimes have this thought in their mind that natural is more risky, or they don't really understand what some of the therapies are. So can you talk about things you might have done from a nutritional standpoint or a supplementary standpoint and what that whole approach looked like for you?
Yeah, of course. And I mean, as you probably say in your practice to your patients, you know, what works for me is not going to be the perfect solution for everyone with MS, or at least I don't know, because the research isn't really there to back it up yet. For sure. But I balance between three categories. So healthy thinking is one, healthy eating, and healthy moving. And so in the healthy thinking category, I mean, this was really transferable skill from speed skating, because it's visualization, breathing techniques, mental focus. That's a daily practice, and you're training your brain and your mental strength just as much as you are physically. So I applied that same concept to my healing and developed some strategies to help me cope with stress, take on a more positive attitude, and then also just do some visualization and breathing techniques that really helped me gain some inspiration for the future that's in store. Because with an unpredictable disease, sometimes you can go down a rabbit hole in your head thinking, you know, you could be in a wheelchair in 2 years, and you start visualizing that. And I no doubt think you could probably attract that reality if you did continue down that path. So healthy thinking is a really big category for me. It's a daily practice to this day. The second one is healthy eating. I became a nutritionist and I practice all different sorts of diets. And ultimately it's like you swing the pendulum to one diet or the next, or one supplement routine to the next. And ultimately it came down to balance, if you can believe it. And it's a matter of, you know, some of the basics, like eating lots of vegetables, but a variety of vegetables, you know, lots of cruciferous vegetables, lots of greens, lots of sprouts and funky vegetables and herbs, and just getting that variety in. And then I do eat meat. I'm not afraid of the fat on any kinds of foods. In fact, I welcome it. I eat a lot of fatty foods. And yeah, and then I limit dairy and a lot of grains, but I don't eliminate it completely. So it's just about all about that balance. And I sort of my people talk about the 80-20% rule. And it just depends, you know, someone's 80% is healthy to one person and not to the other. So I feel like that's a tough strategy to go with. So I just try to make sure I get a certain amount of vegetables, water intake, that kind of stuff throughout the day. And I'm always playing around with what works best for me. As an athlete, you also develop this intuition with your body, and you become really in tune and can feel the effects of dietary changes. So I'm always monitoring it to figure out what is ideal for me. And sometimes what's ideal for me right now in the winter months of Canada is different than in the summer months. My exercise change, maybe my stress levels change, whatever the case, my diet changes with it. And I'm really conscious of that. And I think some of the most important things with diet has nothing to do with food and more to do with I never eat when I'm on the run. And if I am on the run, I'll cater to more of a smoothie or soup style meal. I make sure I chew my food really thoroughly. I take a long time to eat meals. And I drink a ton of water, and my water is consumed mostly between my meals and a lot when I first wake up in the morning. And then the last category is healthy moving. So I just get a variety of exercise in. I try to get 3 to 4 really good workouts in a week, whether it's running or weightlifting or something like that. And then on the weekends, I like to go skiing or cross-country skiing or snowshoeing or do activities like that. I do a lot of cycling. It's a natural crossover sport for speed skaters, so I still like to do that. And yeah, so those are the three categories that I just balance and fit to my lifestyle, my palate, my wallet at the time, and make sure it works for me and doesn't add stress. Because sometimes when you make those dietary or lifestyle changes for your health, it can put a unnecessary amount of extra stress. So I try to stay conscious about how it's affecting me and my lifestyle.
Yeah, I love all of that. Thank you for sharing that, Crystal. Those are all, I mean, three practices that I think are so core for people to implement into their life. And again, it's about starting where you're at. And I definitely agree that, like you said, especially in relation to diet, that there is no one size fits all. And I'm a really big advocate for people to figure out what works for your body. There might be certain foods in your diet that are really fueling you and making you feel really good. And there might be others that are causing inflammation and activating your immune system. And in episode 4 of this podcast, I talk about food sensitivities and how you can personalize your diet. So if that's something that you want to learn more about, I encourage the audience to take a listen to that episode specifically. But the seasonal eating is another big thing. Like you said, in Canada, in the winter, most people do best with more of a cooked foods diet versus having a lot of the raw vegetables. And so it's about experimenting and seeing what works for your body. Crystal, on the mindset approach, I want to talk a little bit more about that with you. And so in 2015, you were named as one of Calgary's top 40 under 40, which is pretty amazing. Congratulations on that. But in the article they wrote up about you, they write about that, what you were referring to there, that you didn't want to visualize yourself as being in a wheelchair. And so I'm wondering, like, did you consciously build in visualization practices focused otherwise on looking at the positive?
Yeah, I do it both for my health, my life, my business, my organization, my relationships. I always, you know, I'm a big goal setter, but I like to almost meditate on those goals. So, you know, if I have a goal in mind and it's sort of the dream goal of, say, a world-renowned NeuroCam research center based out of Calgary, that is a really big goal of mine. And it's going to take a few years to get there. Mm-hmm. And it's one of those, like, pie-in-the-sky ideas to many people, but I've been thinking about it so much in my head and visualizing it happening that I have this like incredible clear picture. And whether I get to that specific picture in my mind or not, it gets me up in the morning. It drives me to do the work that I do every day and no doubt get me closer to making it a reality. And the same thing goes for my health. Like when I think about my future, you know, I'm about to get married. When I think about my future with my relationship and my fiance, John, you know, there's a lot of dreamy thoughts of us skiing in the Alps and snowshoeing and hiking all around the world. And yeah, just being a really active couple. And yeah, and so I if thoughts of fear of me being in a wheelchair come in, I can literally cover them up pretty quickly. And by covering them up, I don't want to make it sound like I'm suppressing them, but I let them come in, I recognize them, and then I find a different version of that thought that I prefer and makes me feel good and motivates me.
Yeah, that's such a powerful tool, I think, for people to learn and to start implementing. And it might not be something that necessarily comes naturally. I definitely find that some people find the whole process of visualization easier than others, but it is a practice. Yeah, exactly. What is your why in regards to building the NeuroCam Research Center in Calgary?
The why is to build a critical mass of experts from various backgrounds. So I call them unlike minds experts. So often when we have specialties and a goal like a world free from neurological disorders, you would naturally attract neuroscientists. But the goal for this is to create a more cross-collaboratory center where we have engineers and we have media people and artists and neuroscientists and MBA students and that sort of thing, all working together towards that goal. So this center would really flatten hierarchies and promote that cross collaboration and then create kind of a magnet to attract the experts towards this area of study.
I love it. You're so clear on that, which is one of the things that I really admire about you. You've just got this incredible clarity and incredible vision and drive. So can you tell us right now about some of the research that might be going on through the Brownshout Foundation and how people can help to support that?
For sure. Yeah. So we have a lot of really cool projects that have come out and, you know, I'm only exaggerating a little bit when I say I've raised millions of dollars, $50 at a time, because a lot of the money that we've attracted has come from, you know, Aunt Nancy and whatever, you know, $20 to $50 to $100 at a time. So it speaks volumes about the base of foundation that we have built for support and the need that the community wants this to happen. And if you're talking in research world, $2 million is not that much money. Research is really expensive. But what I'm most proud of is we've been able to fund 65 research projects. We have created a scientific review panel to identify the top neuroscientists so far across Western Canada and hopefully across the country in the next couple of years. We identify those top neuroscientists to work on novel programs that wouldn't otherwise get funding. So an example would be how magnetic brain stimulation could have a positive effect on children with either Tourette's syndrome, where they actually can take magnetic stimulation, which has a very non-invasive form of treatment for children, and they can increase the activity in children with major depressive disorder, where the activity is decreased. And then in Tourette's syndrome, where there's too much activity in an area of the brain, they can actually decrease that activity to turn down their tics in Tourette's. So that's one of the exciting projects. Typically, it can take 20 plus years to get an idea in research all the way to making clinical impact with it. Mm-hmm. And it takes about $2.4 billion. And I'm talking the average here. And that's pretty significant. With this RTMS or magnetic brain stimulation research, we've invested about $120,000 into students and into the research lab that's doing this out of the Alberta Children's Hospital. And they've been able to take the idea to getting suicidal teenagers with major depressive disorder to highly functioning and happy and back integrated into society after a 6-week program with magnetic brain stimulation. That is just one of 65 research programs that we've been able to fund. We've looked into how the ketogenic diet could affect positively people with autism, with epilepsy, also with pain management for spinal cord injuries. We've looked at how a vitamin has a stronger effect on shrinking a glioblastoma tumor than conventional therapies alone. And that's a paper that's going to be published in weeks from now. So that's a super exciting one. And not only is it stronger than the conventional approach, this vitamin, which I can't quite say yet, but this vitamin with that conventional approach isn't as strong as the vitamin alone. So talk about a much simpler solution with zero side effects to be able to address one of the most deadly tumors in cancer. So that's a really fun one to be working on. And I could probably go on for hours and hours on all of the research programs, but I hope that gives you kind of an idea of some of the work we're doing. And I'll just say one more, because it's really cool, because it kind of merges technology and non-pharmaceutical approaches, is Dr. Bin Hu is a well-renowned neuroscientist in Parkinson's. And we've always known that there's some kind of link between music and dance and Parkinson's. And he's developed a wearable technology where Parkinson's patients who develop a symptom called freezing, where literally they could be walking and then their body just stops and they can't walk anymore. So you can imagine the effect that has on their lifestyle when you're afraid to cross the street in case you freeze. So Dr. Bin Hu knew that there was some kind of correlation with music's ability to create a neuroplastic change in the brain. So he developed a wearable technology where Parkinson's patients with the freezing effect would walk, and when their stride is normal, it triggers music to play that they enjoy and appreciate. And if they start to change their stride and it becomes irregular, it will actually trigger noise to play. And that's a reminder that, oh, you need to increase your stride or whatever. And you do a training program on average about an hour a day. And he's seeing results with some of his patients where a year later, not only when the music is playing do they not ever freeze, but they can now, because they've been training for a year with this, they can take the app off and they're still walking without freezing. And he can measure the new neuroplastic changes in the brain based on, really, in the end, it's music and walking.
That's pretty incredible. I mean, all of those things, all of this research that's being done, I mean, it's all pretty groundbreaking. And I hope that through sharing this podcast and getting this out there, that other naturopathic doctors and other people in the alternative or complementary health industry can stand behind this and help support you guys with everything that you're doing. Because, I mean, again, it's just so important. I know the firsthand through working with patients one-on-one. I see all of these small examples on a day-to-day basis of people having these really huge changes through some of these simple things, really, that we can be incorporating. But to get this on a broader scale and be researched is so exciting. So I want to segue a little bit back into you. And one thing that I want to know is, with you being in remission now for 8 years, do you still identify with having a diagnosis of MS?
I do, because I have to be honest, I still have minor symptoms that I deal with, but I don't have anything that's really more annoying than the common cold. In fact, I barely ever get sick, like civilian sick. But I don't really mind the symptoms, but every once in a while I have weird sensation in my skin. After my first relapse, when I was still a teenager, I developed sort of a leg spasm, or it twitches. It's not painful at all. So that happens. And then I didn't fully recover from the loss of vision in my left eye. So I have about 50% vision in my left eye.
Okay.
But other than that, yeah, I don't really notice that I have MS.
For sure. So it sounds, I mean, so I have a condition that causes heart palpitations to come up for me that can be really quite severe, and it comes on out of the blue. And for me, I get it more if things in my wellness regime start to slip. And so the way I look at it for me is, it's kind of this marker that keeps me on track and consciously implementing all the things that I know I need to be doing in my life. So, like, do you feel the same kind of way with the MS? Do you look at it as a bit of a guidepost?
Yeah, exactly. Like, I think that's such a good attitude to adopt. It's a blessing to have those signs, because before it felt like the disease was totally out of control. But then when I realized that if you're really in tune with your body and you have a good understanding of what you're doing is either good or bad for you, you have a better control over your disease. So, for example, I had symptoms, weird sensation in my face a few weeks ago, and I thought, okay, that's a sign. Like, what can I sort of tighten up with my lifestyle and diet and that sort of thing. And, you know, I look at, you know, the 2 weeks prior, it's like, oh, that was a pretty stressful time. I was probably sleeping less. You know, I went out with my friends. I had a couple beers that week and I don't drink a lot of alcohol. So maybe that had an effect. And so really I just took that sign to sleep and to eat well and to reduce stress and that kind of stuff. And of course, 3 days later, it goes away and I'm back to normal. So historically, when I was training as a speed skater still, and I would feel symptoms like my left leg would go numb, I felt so behind my competitors that I would just push through it and pretend it wasn't there. And then I would wake up and then I'm completely numb and I can't move my legs. So, I know that there are many strategies I can take on, and I'm sort of grateful for those warning signs.
Yeah, no, that's great. And I think sometimes for us strivers that do have that tendency to push through our bodies, little whispers that we need to slow down, that, I mean, sometimes these bigger symptoms come up and that's what encourages us to go inward and tune in and get aligned with the needs of supporting when our body needs to rest. And I know I've learned that in my own ways over the years. And one thing that I try to do myself, it's a practice, it's another one of those practices, and that I encourage to my patients, is that when these challenges or these health struggles come up, as much as possible, to try and identify how whatever is occurring is happening for us instead of to us, and to find something to be grateful for within that experience. And is that something that's come up for you at all with your journey with MS? And I mean, I see that the Branch Out Foundation has been birthed out of all of this, but anything to share there?
No, I think you said it well. I'm on the same page with you there.
Perfect. So I want to turn this back out into something we can do to help the audience. And so if someone were to come up to you after the interview and shared that they were really inspired by your story and really resonated with everything that you've been talking about, but that they're struggling with their health and feeling stuck or overwhelmed as to what to do next, what would you recommend to somebody just to be able to get their foot in the game and get some initial momentum?
Yeah, I would try to empower them and inspire them to know that they are their best doctor, and for them to sort of be the CEO of their own health, if you will. Because if you leave it to one practitioner, they're only going to have one perspective and one view. And you need to trust that you know best, and you start to read your body. You know more than you think you know about whether things are good or bad for you. And so that would be number one, is don't be afraid to, you know, take control and be really proactive about your health. Look at all angles and trust your intuition, really, when it comes to whether something's working or not. And then the other thing would be to build a team of health practitioners. Sometimes this can be expensive and time consuming, but for me, I mean, I was a speed skater and a student. I had no money. I had to get, you know, often when you're lacking in resources, you have to be a little bit innovative and you need to figure out a way to gain access. I mean, we have the internet, so we have access to a lot of great information. So there's a lot of stuff that you can try and figure out on your own. And unfortunately, I'm not saying don't talk to your doctor or see professionals. I'm just saying that you should be able to kind of help put all the pieces together from all the information that you're gathering, from all the resources that are accessible to you.
Yeah, I'm actually a huge advocate for that. Even, I mean, as a naturopathic doctor and working one-on-one with my patients, I always basically share with them that I do not tell them what to do. This is a partnership and I help to guide them along the path. So to everyone listening, I do think it's so important to be the driver of your own health. And at the end of the day, it does come down to you. You need to do what feels right for you. You don't have to do any treatment plan if it doesn't feel like it is resonating with what your body needs. I always encourage to all of my patients, get copies of your lab work, start your own health file, and keep track of what you're trying and what you're doing so that you know, because you know what's going on inside of you. So thank you for sharing that, Crystal.
Yeah, you bet.
And yeah, thank you so much for joining us on the podcast today. I know that there's so many people listening that by hearing your story, they've gained hope and inspiration as to what's possible, no matter what it may be that they're going through in their health. So thank you so much for taking the time to join us today and for all of your incredible insights and for all of the work that you're doing with the Branch Out Foundation to really help people on a much broader scale.
Thank you. No, this is fun. And I hope that, you know, this information resonated with a few people out there. And yeah, I encourage you to check out the website and the work that we're doing.
Yeah. And so can you share the URL and if there's anywhere that they can follow for social media or anywhere they can go to help to contribute to the cause?
Yeah. So the website's branchoutfoundation.com. And my Twitter handle is Crystal Patches.
Fabulous. Okay, everyone, please go check out the Branch Out Foundation. And if you live in Calgary, there are always some pretty amazing fundraising events going on for the organization. So if you're into bike rides or art nights, there's a whole bunch of different things that are always coming up. So make sure to go and check that out. And thank you, Crystal, again for joining us today. And now to all of you Healthy Life Redesigners out there, no matter how big of a challenge or obstacle you may currently be facing, remember that transformational change occurs one small action at a time. So what can you do right now to go and support your self-care? Maybe it's as simple as bring yourself a cup of calming herbal tea, getting outside for a walk in the park, or taking some time to journal and reflect on your inspirations gained through this interview with Crystal. In the words of Martin Parnell, who I interviewed in episode number 2, you don't have to do everything, but you have to do something. So make sure to get out there and take action. Now, if you enjoyed this episode, please be sure to share it with a friend and don't forget to subscribe to the Healthy Life Redesign podcast on iTunes or wherever you listen so you don't miss a beat. I look forward to having you back here again next week with more advice and inspiration to help you own your health and live a life you love. Bye for now.